have you, Eternal Father, that God bless you and rest upon us as we meditate on these conditions in our environment and upon thy purposes for the earth, knowing that you have called us to assemble ourselves together that we might be instructed of thee, that you have given unto us the purity of thy word, that you have inspired them throughout periods of time as they have been moved by thy instruction to record and to give unto us thy purpose and plan. And we do not stand in ignorance concerning that which we have accomplished in the earth, nor are we without excuse, because we stand before thee as thy children with the capacity to understand, to be moved by thy spirit. We pray that you shall cause each one of us to recognize our relationship in this hour to the events which are taking place round about and to the impact which we are to have upon the world, that we might bear witness to the truth, that we might lift up our hand against the darkness, that we must take thy standard and carry forward thy purpose and perform those tasks as sons and daughters of God which you have ordained from the beginning. Grant unto us a reason within us that will understand thy purposes and cause us to realize that evil cannot triumph. Cause us to recognize that victory belongs unto us, and without fear we shall approach these patterns and destroy them. We pray, our Father, that you will grant unto each one of us with vision this realization that you have promised that you would walk with us, that you would hold us by the hand, that you would be as unto us an abiding presence, a supreme power, an absolute assurance of victory in the hours of need. We pray for this great nation of thy kingdom, for the mighty vision with which you inspired men to frame and form it, and for the declaration of thy purposes as it has been making them known and stand in past ages. And now, our Father, as we survey the things which are before us, we pray that you will restore unto our nation its stature of greatness, and restore unto its leadership that you lift up thy standards, and shall awaken thy people to carry forward thy purposes, and thus also quicken and strengthen all the great nations of thy kingdom in this hour. And as we pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Grant unto us the vision of the spiritual force which will move in our midst to accomplish these purposes. So we say, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. In thy name we ask it. Amen.
Tonight, as we talk about the power behind the revolution, let's bring this revolution very home to you, very close. A number of people have asked questions tonight concerning the world situation, the world market, world finance, what's going on. It's all tied to the one same picture. Probably never before has the world witnessed what's now transpiring with as complete a coordination as the design now for the forces in which to rule the world to close the ring and to climax what they have been designed to do. Nobody often we think about the Red Revolution as something far removed from it, a strange and peculiar phenomena that rose up inside the Soviet Union and took over the Russians, liquidated the Tsar and his family, and has since been ruling from inside of Russia. I want you to know that the revolution was not Russian. Revolution was not only not Russian, but was not developed or designed by Russians. That revolution is far more deep-rooted than the days of the 20th century when things should take great sweeping hope. That's one of the reasons why when we go back to the origin of the Copyright Revolution, we discover some very strange things. Suppose I tell you that in February of 1776, the World Red Revolution was in the process of being formed. Before Karl Marx had written Das Kapital, before the blueprint by which the doctrines of socialism would have a Bible from which to run, Hansel Mayer called together the heads of the Kahila. They met in his house on the 4th of February in 1776. 2 weeks before that, a continued and constant conference had been held under the leadership of Otto Marxbach, who at that time formed an organization known as the Illuminati. These Illuminati were formed in that year, and the Illuminati were made up 100% of organized and well-defined Kahila leadership from all the Jewish Kabbal Kahilas throughout the world. There were allowed in this group of Illuminati some non-Jews, but they were subservient to the word Kahila. When Otto Marxbach formed the world Kahila, they had 2 weeks of conference and convention, and it was followed by the February meeting on the 4th of February in the home of Hansel Mayer. Hansel Mayer was one of the most powerful, wealthiest Jew bankers then in the world. He had assembled in his house a group of gold buyers and exchangers, and he had a group of powerful, wealthy Jewish merchants from Venice. They came from Italy, they came from France, they gathered in England for this special session, and Hansel Mayer made the historic statement, "Gentlemen, we propound from all of the nations nations of the world into a state of revolution. We propose, before we are through, to take an area of the earth which becomes most acceptable to our strategy, and especially should this be an area close to or a part of Asia, where we can have sufficient manpower eventually reduced to our disposal through the process of revolution, then we will be able to hurl the manpower again at Christian civilization to make it subservient to us through military power if we cannot accomplish our major objectives which we now outline. The Namco Mayor said there is a simple little way in which we understand to reduce nations to our control. This simpler way is to gain control of the economy or the substance which the world calls money. The administration and control of the ancient Roman word moneta is all that we need to understand, said Namco Mayor. Being the head of, at that time, the world Kahila Agency, what was then known, assembled Jewish clans, which were affiliated almost all in leadership with Adam Wartop and Illuminati, which by this time was only a little over 2 weeks old. Just remember that the Illuminati formed 2 weeks before, and from the Illuminati to the assembly of the international financial heads of world jewelry and the money lenders of Europe to the home of Angela Mayer. Then Angela Mayer turned that day and said, in any country, give us the power to coin and distribute the money, and we do not care who makes it law. Then he said, I personally can assure you that by the processes which we have implemented, we will be able to take over and control all Christian nations and befuddle their minds and reduce them to a status of slavery. Little did people recognize what the Illuminati was destined also to do in this part. But when Adam Wartop formed the Illuminati, one of its major principles was to do all in power to condemn and destroy the doctrine of the Christian faith, to repudiate the recognition of Christ, and to establish a program which would eventually deteriorate into world religion. World religions all embracing with multiple deities instead of one, and to control such multiple religions under a super prepared special priesthood dominated and controlled by jewelry and participated in it was discussed both at the Illuminati and later as a diversion for breaking down the strong foundations with which Christian nations would be able to carry out their own background and destiny. Also, when these discussions were made, few recognized how far reaching this purpose was. Those who go back to the early American Revolution know that we started that revolution in order to get out from under the control of the British Empire, when Great Britain, or especially England, was at that time taxing us without representation. But the history of that taxation is also rather interesting. We have volumes to deal with it. And you'll discover it was Amstel Mayer who founded the House of Rothschild and who at that time was designing to take over the Bank of England that went to King George, and that also previously in 1775 and again in 1776 he said that these colonies continue to discuss resistance to your programs of taxation. Then remember that I will provide the necessary substance which you need to secure for you sufficient arms and strength to put down any rebellion in the colony, and will add to the income of the empire, and for this I require only one thing, that in eventuality of rebellion, that I will have permission to control in the United States, or rather in the colony, the banking and exchange, the monetary exchange of those colonies, subservient in only this position of paying its proper revenue under the crown. But if the colonies would be triumphant and you would not win, then I would request the right, by agreement now made, to become the directing force and to control from now on the Bank of England and to operate this with no expense to the crown, to handle all of the crown's projects, the financing of the empire, and to administer its economic affairs. So King George was caught in the middle because he then had an army that was in Egypt. And he was told that this army would be left there, but it would be brought home and finances in various places would be met if this was followed. And it was by this process that George reduced the colonies and the resulting conditions took place, starting with the Boston Tea Party and the 4th of July in 1776, in which we declared ourselves a new nation, and we were dedicated to the purpose that we were not going to be taxed without representation, and we were going to know the freedoms which we had dedicated ourselves to prepare. Remember that John Adams had been carrying on a letter-writing campaign campaign, and together with other leaders of the thinkers of the colony, had covered a vast area of thinking population, and they were determined that if they could not have proper representation, then they would therefore declare that these colonies were free and independent from England, and would duly federate themselves together under Articles of Federation, which of course took place, followed later by your constitution, and the eventual development which was given birth at that time in this nation. Now, the thing that was significant was, of course, as you understand, England lost the war. And immediately, Amstel Mayor called for the fulfillment of his contract. Amstel Mayor, or the House of Rothschild, the most powerful at that time Jewish banking system in the world, took over the Bank of England, and from this time on, by agreement, would control and handle the affairs of distributing money and controlling money inside of the British Empire. Would handle all of the financial affairs and the affairs of the crown, and of course would be closely related even to the exchequer and the treasury. So that took over, placing, of course, Britain under control financially of this powerful system. Strange as it might seem, in the United States at that same time, the House of Amstel Mayor, now called the House of Rothschild or the Bank of Red Shield, had established in the United States certain agencies to handle their program. The program was actually eventually the subjection of every nation of the world to a permanent ruling administration of international world Jews. Well, the fact was that they set up in New York a New Amsterdam mercantile establishment under a man whose name was Amstel Mayor's appointment was known as Hyman Solomon. Now, the neat thing about it was that Peter Stuyvesant, as you remember, had been the first governor of New York Colony. And it's a matter of interest that Peter Stuyvesant would not let a Jew stay all night in New York City. He would not permit any of them to settle there, and he had very firm and religious beliefs concerning this. He said, they are the enemies of Jesus Christ, and according to the gospel, to the epistles of John, they deny that Jesus is the Christ or the Antichrist, and as long as I am governor of this colony, no Antichrist shall reside there after the sun goes down at any time. So he did his best to keep them out. If we had been as quiet as he was, we'd have a greatly different picture tonight to talk about. We'd have a free land with lots of plenty and no worry about depressions or monetary shortages or financial conspiracies. But of course, we weren't as quiet as Peter Stuyvesant, and so we're in problems tonight. Well, the fact remains that that goes back to quite a time. Behind the Solomon set up a mercantile establishment with front. Eventually, Hyman Solomon, in the days when we declared our independence, had a powerful mercantile exchange in New York. There was associated with him a treasonable type by the name of Samuel Morris, and you've heard about what a wonderful fellow this was, and this was one of the first conspiratorial economic acts that served the Jewish system in the history of the United States. Benjamin Franklin, faced with problems as a representative of the Congress in financial affairs, had gone to Europe to secure sufficient finance to get enough arms to fight the revolution. While he was over there, Hyman Solomon and Samuel Morris made plans with ship captains to deter the return of Benjamin Franklin, who secured from the market he had at his own part of the sphere sufficient money to buy arms for the carrying forward the work of the revolution. But he was deterred from returning while Samuel Morris made three appearances before the Senate and laid down the terms by which they would loan the colonies the money for the revolution. These called for a 6% interest plus an override of 4% on all the gross revenues of the country apart from this loan until the loan was repaid or until 20 years thereafter it expired. More than that, it also called for an additional levy for the provision of any of these amounts which were made and sold, which in turn was being used for direct exchange in buying arms on site, where they might not accept the letters of credit of these various Jewish banking houses. And the colonies would not accept this at first, but after three appearances and no appearance of Benjamin Franklin, Samuel Morris put this water operation over to the point that the loaners or the holders of section card debt would have the right to accept either the principal or payments on the principal or the interest, or in any given year, if they so decided, they could refuse to accept payments of both interest and principal. Now that's all that's left in this agreement. So the Congress didn't know what was in the mind of these Jews. They didn't know they were being taken out of conspiracy, but someday they were going to see more about it. And they made the deal. And the next day, Benjamin Franklin arrived with money enough to carry on the revolution, and he walked in and found out what had happened. He said, "Gentlemen, you've been taken, you have been exploited. And if you want the record of what he said, it's a matter of history. You can see it in the Library of Congress." He said, "Gentlemen, all you Eurasiatics, having no partner lot in our Western civilization, and should not be permitted to either integrate or ever settle with our colonies. They have produced another fraudulent and tricky deal. They have deterred my arrival. I have the money without any of this interest agreement whatsoever, and there is no telling what this will run to. I think you might be interested in this, because it's a part of the story of the revolution, many revolutions, but actually a design to take over the world. Did you know that those bankers of Samuel Morris and the assignment of Hyman Sound and Samuel Morris Rothschild, due to the eventual history of several families, a powerful banking family in Germany that moved also into the United States, was known as the Schiff family, and Jacob Schiff and his family established their banks in New York in 1863. But prior to this time, the Schiff family were located in Germany, France, England, and here. The House of Rothschild had expanded and grew its processes of interchange and marriage, had married into another powerful, gold-lending Jew family named Warburg. And because of this, one of the Warburgs had married one of the Schiffs, who in turn, their offspring, married the descendants of the Hyman Solomon division of the Samuel Morris Rothschild family, and the Warburg house inherited the indebtedness which was owned to the colonies by this procedure. 16 times they refused to take either the interest or the payment. Tonight, Mr. Paul Warburg and Felix Warburg of the United States are the holders, these are the Warburgs, so active in the New Deal administration, are the holders of the indebtedness from the revolution. Oh, you say, but we've gone 2 years, we've paid that off many times. Let me tell you something. Tonight, the debt from the revolution that the Warburg family holds is greater than the entire amount we got from them at that time, because for many years they refused to take anything on the principal and only accepted a small part of the interest until they let the thing build up over the years so it's bigger than it was originally, and they can still draw all these dues to this day. Now, I think there's something else that's significant that you should know. There came to these United States in the sons of the Warburg, who established now the most powerful control in Europe, and that's why I have here an intelligence digest of significance, because it deals with the exact number of investors that indirectly financed the Red Revolution in Europe. The eventual taking over and subsidizing of Das Kapital as the socialist Bible as the foundation for revolution was also discovered. I want you to understand this. Both the Illuminati as well as the Hera and the United World Bankers, which were under the House of Rothschild for many years, and whose most powerful family is the Warburg family, more powerful than the Rothschilds themselves. They said, "We are not interested in the doctrines and philosophies of any revolution. We are only interested in getting such a revolution going that through its instrumentality is maintaining the power to control states. That in such process, if we can secure a group of those who will front for us, we will run any revolution in only one direction, to gain control over the mass working power of the people, to harness that power for the conquest of other parts of the world, and for the eventual subjection of all government and finance to us." So you today, I want to tell you, this explains something. We mentioned this last night. We talked with experts who've been studying very carefully the policies of the Soviet Union, as well as the policies in our own government here and there, and those behind the scenes, and it is a well-known fact that the theoretical communist who believes in the doctrines of Karl Marx and Das Kapital as an efficient program, or one they can use, is considered an egghead by the hardcore communists. The communists of the Khrushchev school and the Stalin school, the communists of the hardcore communist party in the United States, the communists of the Comintern and its 1.5 million special directors do not believe in the doctrines of Karl Marx, but they only hold them up as a fetish to gather a group of pseudo-intellectuals who flock to them all over the world and argue empty phrases of an economic philosophy which is doomed to failure anyhow. while none of this philosophy is actually executed at the center of administration, wheresoever the revolution is in operation. More than that, there is only a few phases and lessons out of our Marxist philosophy, supported by Trotsky and Lenin as policy and principle for destruction, that are followed out today by the Communist Party. One of them is to use the weapon of taxation with a graduated scale of income tax, with the ability of government and legislative bodies to continue to raise this, until with unprecedented ability to raise such tax and without control, they can tax away as much as they deem necessary of the income of the individual and scatter and disperse it according to the program of redistributing wealth, not on the idea that they're going to help the world, like they tell you, but to make it easy and more available for them to pick it up on the outside of the country from whence it is produced. I want to explain this to you in a few minutes. That is one of the most deadly factors of a world revolution, that is to get the income of the people outside of the nation, where it is more easily picked up. I think you understand what's been going on. Now, the fact remains that the Red Revolution had made its attempts, and they had even used a number of patriots who they were steering carefully in the days of the French Revolution, at times the roads here and others. They didn't know how much they were a part of the Illuminati's design. Some of them were actually taken in and indoctrinated. Much like what transpired in the end of the 19th century, or early, the last of the 19th century, when Charles Trudeau decided that he was going to set up an endowment to create a great area of drawing power to gather from all over the world diplomats and students of international and world affairs, which would provide a reservoir, of foreign service experts for various nations. So Cyrus Rhodes, himself virtually under complete control of the International World Banking Program, set up a special endowment for a perpetual group of scholarships for intellectually bright and especially intelligent young men. So from America, from Britain, from Germany, from France, all of the top honor scholars among men were offered a low scholarship and sent to various schools and academies where they would be under the political science tutelage of special international Jewish teachers. And not only was this designed, but I can tell you much about this because over the period of time from that day to this, there have been over 2,600 Rhodes scholars trained and developed who had high scholarship but little realized that as they were being educated, they were no longer being given avenues of truth or standards which would develop concepts of personal liberty. But they were being taught that they were super intellect and were thus selected to become a part of one of the most beneficent, strong, and world-plan programs of management. They gradually, after a term or two, told the Rhodes Scholar that the masses of the world lacked the capacity to decide for themselves and to provide against the gradual population explosion that modern science and development would produce. They were told because of their special intellectual capacity that they had been selected to lead, provide, and direct the development affairs of the world. And then before they were through, they were told that the concept that representative government in which the major decisions would be made by electors selected by the people would ever become the popular and overall program for world administration is fallacious. That the work, neither the representatives of the people or the people would have the knowledge or capacity, or would have the intellectual requirement and coordination to accomplish this. And that's one of the reasons why you've been selected as a Rhodes Scholar, and that's why you are being trained, and your brains are being developed, that you might help the noble world in the great age which is developing, in which you shall provide the thought power and the creative energy for the masses that do not possess it, and for the world which would surely go awry in catastrophe if it were not for your abilities. Now I'll tell you what this does. Gradually, a bit by bit, day by day, among these Rhodes Scholars, the 2,600 of them were predominantly, or shall we say, over half of these Rhodes Scholars, we know that over 1,400 of them, as history shows, were from Christian families. But they were under a hypnotic influence of instruction for having reached their height of scholarship and being taken into this and guided day by day. Two things were being pumped into them. First, pride of their intellectual and mental superiority. Second, they were being told they were above the masses. Third, they were being told that they had wisdom and brains above all people and should determine the destiny of the world. That they were to work in a master program with those who would guide and work with them who understood these problems. And after two terms of this, a Rhodes Scholar was a conceded instrument of international world banking jewelry. Did they set the plans that way? They set these plans from 1776 when they met, and they didn't bring part of it to fruition until 1909 in the Red Revolution. And they didn't consummate some of it until they got Mr. Kennedy in the White House. That's just how far reaching, how long range this plan. How long is your plan? First question is for us. The household of the Most High has been here some 7,400 years. The program which works to your best interest is the program of the Kingdom of God, and that program of its development of the great nations of God's kingdom would emerge, produce these United States and Great Britain, reported, and Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic, Basque, and Lombard peoples all over the earth. The great nations of the white Christian world are the Kingdom of the Most High God, and they are going to throw off this yoke, and they are going to be triumphant, and they are going to be victorious, and Jewish power is going to be broken for all time. I wish you could have this week's copy of Common Sense. If you don't have one, you should get one in common to begin with. This week's copy, which is just delivered, shows that now only 3% of the appointees in Washington are non-Jews. 97% are, and they name every Jew in every office in Washington in the poll. There's one thing, the Jews go home, and if there's anything wrong, you can sure blame it on the Jews, because they did it. They got 97% of the job. Yes, they didn't do it. They did it. How many Jews? What happens? They did it. That's true. Now let's take a good look at this picture. I'm reading from an intelligence digest, and by the way, you might be surprised to know that I have on the archives of the United States government now, on file, over 5,300 documents that prove out of the archives of the United States government that 100% the world revolution, the dope traffic and crime traffic throughout the world is run and controlled by organized international jewelry. And I can prove that in all periods and every period, and going back to 1905, that the United States government was aware and now knows that it is a Jewish conspiracy, the Jews have run it, which proved without question that great numbers of political leaders have succumbed to this hierarchy of evil and are serving it for personal gain. I wonder what's going to happen. There's going to be a house meeting one of these days, and only Christians are going to be in power in the United States. We have so prepared for this hour that we have multiple copies of these documents. We have microfilms on 5 massive sets of these records in the United States government, well spotted. And if anything transpired or anything was done to stop this message, let me tell you that these documents will blossom like roses and spread from one end of the country to the other, and they'll never stop this truth sweeping this nation, irrespective of who they try to remove or how they try to do it. However, I want to bring to you several things of importance. In March 1917, Mr. Trotsky was speaking in New York City to 300 trained revolutionaries in Rabbi Ben Samuel's synagogue in Brooklyn, from whence the railroad trained revolutionaries went. Eventually they got 600 in the case of Philadelphia and other places. And they traveled these musicians on a trip through Russia. And that's how they were able to get their Tommy guns and their weapons and actually get in close to the Tsar's palace and gain entrance with their instrumentation, supposedly being taken in to play in a massive concert. And once inside the walls, they took those guns and seized and captured the Tsar and his family. It all started in the Jewish synagogue in New York City, financed by Jacob Schiff and Company and Kuhn Loeb and Company, and fell to Belknap Gestapo and a whole group of Jewish merchants and bankers. I want to go back to March 1917, and this is what Mr. Trotsky said, and I'm reading this government report. He said, "I think that it is time for American labor to know that this revolution, which is starting in Russia, is not going to be dependent on the nickels and the dimes of the American working class, for behind us stand the most powerful financial institutions of the world. And when we have accomplished our objectives in Russia, we shall then liberate you, the American working class, through these who become the luminaries of the revolution. Now, I want to point out to you that in United States Government Printing Office, under the title Foreign Relations, United States, 1918, Russia, Volume 1, it says in this report that the Bank of Germany and the Bolshevik revolutionaries, who their authorized agencies were controlling these banks, introduced documents and directions to the revolutionaries, which we now here have in quote on file. Unquote. Get in touch with the bank in Germany through Rubinstein and Max Warburg in Parvis, and be assured that the name of Parvis will open the door. His real name is Israel Lizarevich Kepat. Now, document 9 says that from Raphael Schnodenbaum in Sweden, the letter says, "Dear comrades, the additional finance will be introduced from New York City from Mr. Warburg and Messrs. Schiff and Company, and we have already from America applied the purchase orders for the purchase of the weapons from Essen and Son and for their transmission by way of Poland into Russia for the revolution." I want to point out one more factor, because this I'm going to read to you, again, out of the government document. Remember that the M.M. Warburg and Company in the United States was being directed by two Warburg boys who came here in 1900, Paul and Felix. Felix married Nina Loeb of Kuhn Loeb and Company, and Paul married Frieda Schiff of Jacob Schiff and Company, and Carola married Baron Rothschild's daughter. Thus, Kuhn Loeb and Company, Schiff and Rothschild, were formed now with one leadership of business and family connections at the height of international world jewelry, the United States government document. Now, I'm going to pause and tell you this. The document quotes also the Jewish Encyclopedia. That one of the striking features is that the Warburgs now were located in 28 countries and directing almost all of the Rothschild and Schiff banking interests. Paul Moritz Warburg was given the credit in the United States for forming the most powerful banking syndicate and has been sent here to make America a banker nation. In fact, in the Jewish Encyclopedia, it says Paul Moritz Warburg was sent to America to make it a banker-controlled nation and to develop a system which he and his relatives had been working on, known as National Reserve Systems, under which Jewish banking houses would control the money of all nations. In the book, The Federal Reserve System, its origin and growth, Paul Warburg, the author, wrote, "I do not claim to have originated any new banking principle on my arrival in America, but I was impelled to adopt the banking principles which are the underlying forms of my banking relatives and ancestors whose practices were essential that every country accept, and every advanced country except the United States was already moving under this banking system. I was appointed by the Aldrich Banking and Currency Committee to help formulate the plan, and thus I created the Central Reserve Association with its regional branches. Thus Warburg, who became the head of the Federal Reserve Board while his brother Max headed the German equivalent while the United States and Germany were at war, World War I, which war these international bankers had helped to set up. Now I'll show you what war meant. It tells us here that these banking companies of Schiff and Warburg and the powerful Rothschild family became the controlling influence in directing the finance of Rothschild and Sons directly, Stern Brothers, Irwin Litigated, the Wegman Brothers, the Morgenthau Family Bank, the Jacob Company, the Frankfurt London Ship Bank, the Schroeder and Company, Brown and Shipley and Company, Sassoons and Company, Herbert Wagon Company, Ambrose Bank Limited, the Weinstein Company, Ruffer and Brothers, the Crucian Coonwhip, Clemport and Sons, William Brandt and Sons, Layton, Rebell, Sam Montag, and Morgan Grenfell, Lazarus Brothers, and the bankers of Kuhn Loeb and Company. Then by their pressure, they froze out the National City Bank in the World Banking Assembly, and they took over Mr. Harriman's family bank, and the Harriman Bank became added to it. and they took over Rockefeller's bank by gaining control of the National City Bank, and Rockefeller is no longer the major control of his own bank, and the Jews control the Rockefeller Bank, and they refused to permit Morgan & Company to supply the money to France for weapons in World War I. And Morgan & Company had a heavy investment and had already made the agreement, and Morgan & Company was about to go bankrupt, and Mr. Wilson would not permit Morgan & Company to send money to France. Why? Because Colonel House, who was the 25th column in the White House, had run interference for Kuhn-Loeb & Company in the Warburg. So then the ships went to the President to say, will you permit, if we make the arrangement, will you permit now Morgan & Company, as we administer these affairs, to direct the money for the purchase of weapons where we will make assignments so that they can have the weapons that we want them to have. So through House, they got Wilson to pull the heat off. But to make the deal, Morgan & Company had to accept the management of Jacobship, and they blackmailed and conned Morgan & Company into the Jew Bank, and there is less than 5% of all banks in the United States right now, and practically 2% left in Europe that are not in the hands of this one international bank in Jew City. Hear that now. I got government documents and files and copy and material, and I know where to put my hands on any amount of it to prove exactly what I'm telling you tonight. Now listen. I would cite to you something significant. That in this country, while Max Warburg provided one half of it, Paul Warburg in this country provided the other half of all the finance with which the Red Revolution operated for the first 5 years of revolution. Think that over. You want to know where communism came from? The Jews gave it to you. Right. Now you say, well, what's that got to do now with the Red Revolution? I'm going to show you what it has to do now. From the day that it was formed, and I have a sealed document from the government archivist, and I have made now thousands of copies in my possession, taken from the top intelligence division of the United States government, now declassified, which showed that the United States government knew that American Jews then were directing the entire Russian Revolution, and that every important position had been selected, a Jew was selected to fulfill it, or a Jew selected the man to fulfill it and directed and guided his activities. And then 8 years later, a report by Secret Service to the United States government from our own attaché there again survived the fact that jewelry ran the Red Revolution, and they still run it. The other day, the newspapers were trying to throw up on these smoke screens, and they said that the Jews, you know, were being persecuted now in Russia, that there was a pogrom going on, and they were being persecuted. And you know what the Los Angeles Jewish paper said? The Los Angeles Jewish paper was like the Jews. Now, because we want quiet and alarm, there is no persecution of the Jews going on inside the Soviet Union. We have the Department of Agriculture, we have the Department of Finance, and the political areas of appointment are in the hands of our people. The majority of important jobs in the Soviet Union are in the hands of Jews, so do not fear, there is no posing going on. Now that's in the Jewish newspaper, and so all this story about persecution is for you. Israel ally, when it put over its abortive revolution, drove Christian Arabs and English and others out of Palestine, were financed by international Jewish financiers in this country, but the arms for that revolution came from Skoda in Czechoslovakia and from the nation's Russian rifle factories in the Soviet Union, and Russian submarines carried the men to the shores and landed them in the eastern Mediterranean on the Palestinian shoreline night after night, and the Russians were a full partner with the Jewish revolution in the establishment of Israel ally. I don't want to talk about that subject tonight, but I can talk for 2 hours on facts relating both the design as well as the atrocity of that form of revolution. Now I want to go into something rather significant. These Rhodes Scholars, of which 1,100 of them have been American citizens, were dispersed back into these United States and by their power from the days of Wilson down, and especially in their enhanced power after they had selected their Hyde Park dummy to front for them, who had one qualification, he's a good talker. From the day that they put their money on the line to elect Franklin Delano Roosevelt with an assurance that he'd take their hand-picked training trust and give them powerful cabinet posts in Washington, which is what he did, which involved the Warburg, the Morgan Cause, all of this group, they had now back in this country and now in positions ready for appointment, a great number of Rhodes Scholars, the total number being 1,100. That's why the moment these men started to move into these positions, they started to bring these Rhodes Scholars out, many of whom by now they had correlated secretly into cells of the Communist Party. The Jews run the Communist Party of the United States behind the scenes, even though they used the Peters and these others out in front. I wish. Remember the words of Rabbi Stephen F. Wise, the chief rabbi in America? Some call it communism, I call it Judaism. I have the Jewish magazine opinion in which he makes that statement in my file. Remember, my friends, that that's the story of Alger Hitz, a Rhodes Scholar, specially developed, trained Communist Party member, and then as the protege of Felix Frankfurter, a Communist Party attorney, who became one of your justices of the Supreme Court, and who fathered as his protege, Alger Hitz, into that responsible position as Assistant Secretary of State to Stettinius, and virtually the first Secretary General of the United Nations while it was being formed, and a man who helped draw up and design the agreement made by us and every other nation in the United Nations, that always there would be a Russian general at the head of the United Nations military and police forces, the present man being arbiter. So, if you want the story of treason, and this also involves Mr. White, alias Leeds, who was in the Treasury Department, Assistant Secretary of Treasury, and when he went into the United Nations upper echelon for international finance, and when he was about to be caught a few years ago, jumped out of a window and killed himself before they could take and apprehend him when he discovered by wire that they had gotten the facts and that the McCarthy forces were going to push him. See, the fact remains that Mr. Morgenthau on our Supreme Court bench has helped to put communists in key positions in Washington, D.C. Just remember that Mr. Morgenthau also was the attorney for Sacco and Vanzetti. Remember that he was involved in defending top communists, and remember that when they dug up the names of the communists on the shore of Lake Michigan, the top director of all of the legal defense of Congress, Mr. Morgenthau, or rather Mr. Frankfurter. Now just remember that you have Mr. Frankfurter on the Supreme Court, and some people think now that he's conservative because he makes the podium go that way, but he's already done the major part of his damage. But he's still in there calling shots. Now let me point this out to you. These Rhodes Scholars, almost all of the living 1,100 of them have been appointed to key offices in branches, committees, and divisions of the United States government, from our foreign service to the various branches that control and regulate large and small business and corporate matters, and many of them are inside Internal Revenue, and many of them are inside these areas in which they can carry out their background training. I mentioned this last night. I have an interesting document here. Dr. Oliver is a political science teacher at the University of Illinois. He's one of the best known, best informed political science experts in the world, constantly consulted by Washington experts. And he was making an address before an important and powerful meeting in Washington the other day, and he told about one of his experiences, in which shape. Man who was one of the officials in the Small Business Administration had finally been called into some military type of service, whether by induction or how, and now suddenly from Small Business Administration to a commissioned officer in the United States Army. And this transition is just a matter of a few months. And now, as a rather influential officer doing some strange liaison activity in Washington, Dr. Oliver went to dinner at the invitation of some friends, and this man was there. He didn't realize who Dr. Oliver was, his powerful connections, his relationship, his information sources for internal security and other factors. And he made a statement. This man was boasting on how when he was one of the operating officials in the Small Business Administration, that under this department in Washington, that they would move in on the small business. Now, he was an official in the Labor Relations Board, and he said, we would move in on a small American corporation, and if it wasn't as cooperative as we wanted, or we saw it was not in the hands of our friends, we would immediately call for all the books and records to photograph and to investigate. And we followed them for many months because this business could not do business and was crippled financially.
Oh. Professor Albert said, well, wasn't that violating the constitutional rights of these concerned, these citizens? And this is what the officer of the United States Army said, who wrote scholar, out of a government, labor relations board, and small business administration, is what he said. What do you mean rights? These were American capitalists. They not only do not have any rights, but when we stand them up against the wall, we're going to shoot them in the belly. They die longer that way. An officer of the United States Army, a ex-duty frontier, who persecuted small business corporations because they had the dictatorial kind of power. Same kind of roughneck thugs that the Red Revolution had in Moscow. He said, we're going to stand up against the wall, these capitalists. We're going to shoot them in the belly. It takes them longer to die that way. Well, I guess before Dr. Oliver got through with the fact that he's correlating in Washington, he blew some wigs off in Washington. But I'm going to tell you, you've got a lot of hot congressmen and some unhappy senators in Washington right now. So let me go a little farther in the explanation of what this is all about. He said last night, the finance of the Red Revolution is 100% a Jewish conspiracy, not to set anybody free, not, my friend, merely to have a new political system in Russia, but to gain control of all the money power of the world and to collect and hold all gold and silver and jewels, to dominate the economic and political life of every nation, and these banking companies, under their major control, are in wicked conspiracy to do this. Now I'm going to point out something. It's only a small part of their master strategy. For a short time back, there was set up an organization which has been developing momentum called as a Council of Foreign Relations. It's not a government institution. But the Council of Foreign Relations has some enigmatic evil hold on the United States government to the point that it sets up the foreign policy of the United States government 6 months and a year ahead. Almost every member of it, except for a few of special selected Rhodes Scholars, are bankers or representatives of these Jewish banks. The Los Angeles, the New York Times came out and made the mistake to say, here are the names of 9 new applications for membership on the Council of Foreign Relations, but they were informed that they could not be approved for membership until after the month of June was over, as the Council of Foreign Relations was working on the American foreign policy for the next 6 months. Did you ever hear of anything like that? A private institution dominated by a group of internationalists that want to pull down the American flag and run up the spider web and rule it as the Antichrist organization Christ said it was, that can control our foreign policy? It's time we cleaned house in America and hung every conspirator to the highest grade. Someone says, you can't talk that way. Well, it's all going back. They've got their boy here tonight. I wasn't an air raid, Clark. I have to worry about that. Mr. Khrushchev said today that he wouldn't have to attack us anyhow with airplanes, that the Americans were going to pull down the American flag and run up the red flag most any day now. He's got a lot of red Americans, and I got a cool surprise for him, because I'm going to tell you the man I see running up the red flag is going to die. I know there's 1.5 million American legionnaires that'll help take care of a whole lot more than they try to run that red flag. That's it. Not to say anything about the John Birch side. One powerful and important businessman, one of the most important businessmen in the state of Georgia, was in communication with me the other day. He said, Dr. Swift, you know, we have 3 food truck plans in this state. We have 29 of them scattered across the southern states. And the Attorney General, because of the power behind the scenes, said they're all outlawed and all subversive, but that don't affect my business, he said. So they said, since we're outlawed anyhow, it don't make any difference. He said, just let them start this revolution. We've got nothing to lose. But we're going to finish it. Well, you say, well, I don't like the food truck plan. I don't care whether you like it or not. I'm glad it's down there. You might not like Bible John Birch Society, you might not like the Christian nationalists, and if we had they had their way, there wouldn't be any American Legion, there wouldn't be any war veterans except the Jewish war veterans. We're stronger tonight than we have ever been before. Just going to pause here to tell you something you might not know. There were 11,000 Gale votes when 55% of the precincts were reporting out of San Francisco. What happened to the other 45 precincts, and why could we get any more votes? Los Angeles County, Gale got a total of 30,000 votes. In San Diego and Riverside County, it was from 24 to 27,000 votes. We got both figures. We had a total of reported votes that we were able to get by going from county to county, from election to election board. We discovered that we had 84,000 Gale votes in the state of California, but we got nothing out of San Bernardino County, up above Chico and Sacramento, and up in that area, no votes. And yet we know of whole areas of people that voted. We have over 100 affidavits in Gale's office notarized in which people said, we voted, here's our voting slip, here's our affidavit. Before no Republican, we cast our vote for Gale, and there was no count on the precinct board. Of course, we discovered that there was a rather large amount of confusion after that. One day they said he had 27,000 votes, another day they gave him a total of 54,000 votes. And whenever we tried to get a final count to this day, we have never been able to get a final count of all the boards of electors in all the counties. And we've never got a total amount, and from one excuse to the other, that everything wasn't in, they had to re-regulate the tally. There was just one thing that was very obvious. We received this from a reporter from one of the largest newspapers in the city, and from the tally boards on one of the large television stations that organized jewelry, and Nigel and these boys came in and said, we don't want any right-wing tallies put up, we don't want the country to know anything about their strength, we want to suppress it. Even a lot of shell boats weren't counted. One of these days, people will discover their mistake there, and has already gone over to the Nixon camp. They can tell you there's no deal, but let me tell you something, I wouldn't leave either one of them on a stack of Bibles. There's still going to be a great write-in when November comes, and this time, the majority of Gale votes are going to be written in with Gale votes, because this is one camp that never capitulated. We ended up with about 37,000 names, by the way, you'll be glad to know, of people that said we're with you to the end. That's more than we drank in California. Right wing is just growing, 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 growing. And there'll be leadership when the hour comes. Now let me point this out to you. We mentioned the fact that they wanted to make America a banker nation, and they wanted to set up a central bank. You know what a central bank is? A central bank is a banker's bank that controls the amount of currency that is given to any local bank within the system. And they can determine whether it's withdrawn or extended, and a banker's bank can determine how to manipulate the economy of the nation to satisfy their whims as to whether they can extend money or withdraw, which means they can make a depression, or they can make an inflation, or they can level the prosperity of any country by controlling the money in the circulation, and the money that can be used by companies either for payrolls, or expansion, or development, or anything else. You say, well, how do we ever get that? You were tricked into that, and David Wilson, when you formed the Federal Reserve System, which is does not belong to the United States government, the Federal Reserve System is a false name for a set of private banks. Dominated 100% by the Warburg family, and tonight the international figure who heads the world banking systems of these two banks and is now also the head of the world monetary system and its exchange is Per Jacobson. I want to tell you something. A few weeks ago, there was a big banking assembly of 250 world bankers in Rome. 120 of them came from the Western nations in the United States. And among them, of course, was Mr. Dillon, our Undersecretary Secretary of the Treasury, who is a Jew, by the way. And there is, along with him, was two others of the World Banking System that we have sent into the U.S. Whereas it was bad enough to have a central bank that could withdraw money and give you a depression, or could release it if they so desire. And when you got ready, they wanted you to fight a war to destroy some country they wanted to destroy. There was all kinds of money factories opened up and everything started going within just a few hours. Don't forget that. They can stop the depression in 24 hours and start prosperity rolling if they got an objective. Right. Now, don't forget this. This group of internationalists have been designing the final crumbling and subjection of this nation, if they could accomplish it, to their world masterful control, to force you completely into surrender to a world government program and speed this up with all the other nations which are resistant. The only resisting nations are the nations of the Christian world. So the design is rather simple. The first place, these phony advisors, which have made up all this bunch of new dealers, new frontiers, and everything else, are 100% socialist in their attitude as we talk about academic socialism. They want to take everything from those who have and divide it up to those who have not, and then with dreaded hearts, bleeding, crocodile tears, they try to make you sorry for everybody from Africa to Asia, from starving Chinamen into cannibalistic niggers because of the supply of tenderness you run out. They want you to put your money over there and to build them houses in the treetops like the ones you got on the ground. They want you to give them everything you have, divide up with them. That's the story. Did you ever wonder why these people want to take and confiscate money from the citizens of the United States through taxes and then give it away? Did you ever wonder about that? Why did they want to take your money and give it away? Because it's easier to pick it up outside from a bunch of silly niggers in China than it is to get from you. And if you give away dollars, bailed up and sealed and delivered. Well, you say, we just deposit the bank and then check again. Not this time. You put out dollars and it's picked up and used as dollar credit against your treasury. And these international Jewish bankers have controlled the outside international trade to the point that they have picked up and control most of the $18 billion that your last silly, foolish administrations have given away. Listen, this is only a small part of it. The last four administrations in your government gave away $18 billion worth of your currency. You, by the fraudulent activities of a psycho president, cannot exchange your dollars for gold, but every foreigner in the world can take an American dollar or a group of them and exchange it for gold out of your treasury. The same psycho president devaluated your American dollar, increased gold from $20 to $35 an ounce, and destroyed 40% of all the savings of everybody in the United States. So he can print twice as much money to cover up for his own inability to meet constructively the economic problems of this nation, which is tied right back to Jew banking. I want you to know, and this is a very important thing, that from the days of old to now, every time you want to do something, from expanding something to a project during the Depression on up to the World War, to building dams, to setting up great electrification projects, so how do we build those? Well, we were going to appropriate the money, weren't we? We were going to collect it and tax it somehow. But that don't start the project right now. So the international manipulators, the financiers, and the Rothschilds, with a few banks are setting by, they said, we'll have to borrow this money and repay it by the sale of bonds and retire the bonds by taxes. Now, who's got all this money? Well, here's Mr. Warburg, and here are all these Jew banks. And said, we got it. We got the collateral. We have the collateral. We'll guarantee it. We get the interest, and you print the money. The United States government prints the money, certifies it over to them in Federal Reserve notes. They distribute it. We go ahead and carry out the project. We build the dam. We build the battleship. We go ahead and go. Then we sell bonds, and they guarantee it, and get some of that. Then we promise to pay interest to our people on the bond to retire the money that we give them, that they guarantee, so we can take it back, and they make the interest, and it capitalizes and it compounds. So tonight, the interest on the money that you printed with your pressure that they didn't put up anything for. At no time did they have anything up. It's their word. You owe, according to Mr. Kennedy's report, $1.25 trillion tonight. Think this over. You owe tonight $1.25 trillion. You want to know how much that is? That's more than the capital wealth of all the privately owned property in the United States. In fact, that always covers it. It's about $1 trillion. Now, The other day, the President once asked the Congress to raise the debt limit. There's one thing we can say about our honorable government. We never, never, never go into the dangerous red area of getting beyond the debt limit. We always stay inside the debt limit, so we must be all right, everything must be solid. But all the silly rascals do is raise the debt limit. So now they're going to raise it again so we can go in a little deeper. I'm going to show you one of the greatest conspiracies of all time, like the International Bank, like the Metro Bank, and like this conspiracy that was held in Rome the other day, as international financiers got together to discuss these things. And the subject of discussion is, what are we going to do with the American dollar? All right. This debt of 101 trillion and a quarter, when it was only 500 billion, when it's designed during the war, and reached this point, you know what Mr. Roosevelt said? Don't worry about it when they asked to raise the debt limit. Mr. Roosevelt said, "My friend, we only owe this unto ourselves." Have you met anybody that has any owed to them? We only owe it to ourselves. We owe it to all the Jew bankers, and it's a lying conspiracy. They gave us nothing for it. They just took the interest off of what we printed. But the only real wealth was what we created with our factories, with our shops, with our mines, and with our work. I'm going to point out something. While your silly last quarter administration gave away $18 billion worth of the United States currency, while everybody was telling them from one social revolution to another that this was the way to help the world with the buy bootstraps, they were sinking the United States. The silly churches and everything else were being fed by propaganda just like this that they sent to our church the other day. One of them sell government ideas, projects. I get stuff on the Peace Corps wanting us to sell our young people in our congregation on the Peace Corps, wanting to sell us on subsidizing this country and that one. They want the church to sell their political operations, but they don't want the church to criticize. Now, this quarter and $1 trillion is a lot of money, but nobody talks about that. This $18 billion is not near as big, but it's very important to you because, you see, the United States government does all kinds of business through the banks. You are a head of concern, or you do business, probably most of your business you do through the bank too, and you don't do it with cash at all. You go, you put your cash in, all right. That's your profit cash, your pay cash, your saving cash, you put it in there, but you write checks against it. Most of the business which runs into $300 to $400 billion by creation and exchange each year is paid for by moving checks around that doesn't actually move any necessary great bulk of cash. It just moves the checks and credit around. But the amount of money that the Congress of the United States says, which is constitutionally correct, they have the right to set it, for the currency used, the circulation that you've got to keep is this. The United States government has got to keep, $12.6 billion in gold reserves. But that's the currency in circulation. That's the money in your pocket. And the 2,000 or 3,000 some people carry in their pockets, and maybe the cash reserve others have on hand. The actual dollar currency that we move around inside the United States, they got to keep 12.6 billion. And the rest of the billions of dollars are transferred by check. The total amount of gold you've got in the ground today is $16 billion. But there's all that's all there. I don't trust this question like me. You might have some of the deposits themselves outside. There's 16 billion of it down the ground, supposedly. Now, you know how much money those four silly administrations gave away of dollars, not just credit, dollars? They gave $18 billion away. So you already owe. If they call it owing, because you gave it away, but if they want to collect it back now in gold, you owe $18 billion. You have $16 billion in the ground, and you've got to keep 12.6 billion of it to make your money good. For if that goes, your money's worth. Think that one over. Now, let's go to Mr. Manipulator, the revolution. They have been trying to put this revolution over the United States, not with a frowsy communist party, but the Bolsheviks out in the square. That's all right for dress rehearsal. They've been putting this revolution over with a bunch of boys in striped pants and a bunch of boys behind banker windows who have sold themselves for power while this group of international speakers are going to rule the world with this Antichrist organization, the UN, and through this World Bank power. So I point out to you one of the things that happened that is of great significance. You know, Mr. de Gaulle has been demanding from us nuclear equality and atom bombs, and we didn't give it to him. He's wanting to have more control and to say what happens in Europe, and the reason why your military astute leaders and your proper and constructive statesmen didn't want to give it to him, they say any man that would start a battle against Frenchmen and fold up his own colony, turn the guns on his own people, if a Frenchman will shoot Frenchmen, don't trust that he won't shoot you if he becomes auspicious. That's about the way I size up de Gaulle, too. Because you know who's running de Gaulle? Out of that chamber of deputies, there's almost as many Jews running de Gaulle as we've got around this poor president of ours. I say poor because he's the poorest fool we've ever had.
Yeah, amen.
I'm poor as buck. And he might be broke one of these days, too. You say why? Because he's got his money, the poorest thing in America. Nothing to pay. Now listen, let me tell you this. These two bankers got behind de Gaulle last week. You go down to the United States News, turn the Washington page, and you're going to find about an inch and a half long little square that's the most powerful, dynamic piece of news that you will ever read. That's U.S. News this week. It says what the Washington page says. Mr. de Gaulle now has been notifying the Senate administration. If he doesn't get his way on nuclear weapons, on control of Europe, he's going to call for gold for all the dollar credits he has. And the fact out of the Wall Street Journal, the financial page, the Belgian board said that this bunch of Jew bankers that this Ben Jacobson actually had has put $12 billion worth of collateral in Mr. De Gaulle's hands. So next week, if he don't get his way, or the week after, he could, if they call the signal, get $12 billion by demand out of the United States for you default, and that breaks your dollar, or if you give it to him, you don't have enough to back your own currency, it goes bust. And if you give it to him, the other countries are going to holler for theirs and start running on the back of your $2 billion short, the Jew bankers set you up. Then what would you do? I would just announce to the world that we have suddenly changed from paying gold to the world for American dollars, to recognizing its equivalent purchasing power, and will set the evaluation on silver and goods. But still. They can't do that. England's done it. Every other country's done it. Say the world looks like it. Never mind. The world doesn't like it anyhow. You gave $18 billion, now they're trying to cut your throat with it. Well, let me tell you this. Babylon's about to fall.
Right.
They got around the President of the United States and they pushed his ear. He didn't have any stuff anyhow because not to have a conflict of interest, he sold his shares and everything and bought bonds. He's got billions of dollars of his own in his back. His own private holdings run the millions, but his total family holdings here in his Swiss banks and all over reach into the billions. Now listen. The president was told that the only way to handle this crisis, because the communists are worried about the common market in Europe, and they've been trying to get their banker hold into it as far as possible. They wanted us to force Britain into the common market, to break up the Commonwealth market, so it would force Australia, New Zealand, and other areas of the Commonwealth to trade with Russia. They wanted us to go into the common market so as to smash American labor and American production, which is what it'll do. Now, what kind of a president is this to be wrong on every one of these things? He says, oh, we're going to the common market. Sure, it's going to lay off men because they can make things over there cheaper than we can here, and we're not going to charge them any tariff under this agreement. So that means that that goods will come in here 30% less, and you can make it for it. Your factories will shut down, and your men will go out of work. But don't worry. He says, we're going to put them all on a large percentage of their income until this thing is taken care of. What are you going to pay them with? Money. Where are you going to get it? Going to tax the other people from it. Who's going to be working when he gets through? He never thought that out. He never thought anything out. He thinks it'll be most. So we're going to pay the factories to increase production, and we can't compete against the production unless we have tariffs. If we join this market and throw down our tariffs, we're done. Now, the president goes along to back labor. It's all right in some areas, but there's some common sense here. If labor raises the cost of production, production stocks will add on the price in order to keep going and to develop their instruments and their machinery and to pay dividends. You know who owns most of the stock in American companies? American citizens of average income. Now, you don't invest in a steel company or a telephone company or anything else unless you expect to get a dividend or a return. You put the money to work to build goods and you want some of the profits of the goods you help build. The President of the United States gathered out with that dictatorial cry 6 weeks ago to steel companies that you can't make any profit. And this is what the Jew advisors around me wanted you to do. And instantly, people said, we're not going to invest in steel if we can't make a profit. And the market started this. Now, in steel, he made another statement the other day. He said it was 250 employers and labor leaders at the White House. He said, now I want you to work with me to solve the problem. I want you to tell me what you think is wrong with our economy, but remember, I want you to listen. We're not coming together as Republicans or Democrats, conservative or liberals. We're coming here as sophisticated gentlemen. He says, I want you not with a technological left or right solution. I want you to give me a sophisticated answer to every technological problem. A sophisticated gentleman, a sophisticated government, a sophisticated aid, and this is the solution. I want you now, as we meet here, to meet this with complete sophistication. And everybody said, what are you talking about? Said, I thought I knew what sophistication was. I thought when I saw this fellow and this woman going down the street and he had a striped trousers, a stuffed shirt, his nose up in the air, and I thought maybe they were kind of sophisticated. Or when they thought they could read something that you couldn't read, when you could read the same thing, right? Well, you go to the dictionary and you see what sophistication is. You go to America, you go to Webster's dictionary, you'll find out sophistication is a fraudulent attitude which is approached with insincerity, a front of bluff, and the sophistication is a foundation for an insecure and actually fraudulent or lying presentation. If you go to Oxford Dictionary, you'll discover when you go into that sophistication is unreal, a faucet foundation, a position untenable because it is not valid. So the president told 250 business of labor, I want a fraudulent, unvalid, phony front. And that's the kind of thing I want you to give me today. And that's the only time we've gotten out of the new frontier since it's been there. You ought to read the editorial 2 weeks ago, United States News, when they cover the address. I got the whole address, by the way, since then. It's one of the most insipid things you've ever read. All right. The president told them and then told the press that a business is going to have to make up its mind that it's either going to have to renounce profits or it's going to have to devaluate the dollar. I want them to think this over now. We're going to have to renounce profits or devaluate the dollar. If business renounce profits, it finds itself a door, right? Can't run business without any profit. There won't be any income without any profit. So business must now renounce profits, we're going to have to devaluate the dollar. We talk about devaluating the dollar, Selling Company, Jacobson Company, World Banking Company, Jew Bankers and Company as the next step in the collapsing revolution. Yes, international Jew bankers, whose names I have given you tonight, finance the Red Revolution, still running, still control the Council of Foreign Relations, still control a group of foundations, still are behind the Rhodes Scholars, still are behind the administration in all the cautious policies. So the stock market goes down, 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 down. Now let me give you a little piece of advice. Don't sell your stock unless you bought it on margin. If it's a good company, food, good company, you keep it. It's better than the dollar to get for it, because they can devaluate the dollar, but they can't change the factory from being a factory, and you own so much of it, regardless of what they say it's worth. And one of these days, it's going back up, and that's what they're figuring on. But the other day, a few weeks ago, last Thursday, when the market came up a little bit, it was because Jew bankers in Zurich, Switzerland came and bought it, and United Funds came and also bought a lot of blue chip stocks for their investments in America to try to hold the line. And then the next day, it's over again. And after it goes down far enough, they came and bought some more. War, and United Funds sold some level stocks and came in and bought some that dropped because they were scattering stocks for their investors, which was good. And the Jews are unhappy because the United Funds has been tricking them. But let me tell you this. They have been trying to smash your stock. Well, you can take 54% stock of Safeway and drop it down to 34 and still sell just as much goods in the store. And when you can see that coming, you can know there's a manipulating panic. And I know that you bankers expect it to hit 29% before you hit bottom and they wait to buy it, you see? See who runs the stock market crash? Now, I want to point this out to you. Expecting a revaluation of the money, many of these bankers have pulled their money out of their own bank and have put this money in Home Stake Mines, which was one of the few stocks that went up. I just point that out so you see where the head of gold is. Let me add this picture to you tonight, because this is one of the strategies that they have prepared for. That was that there would be a call for American gold, there'd be an upset in the American monetary market, and then all of the creditors, once America was declared to not be fiscally sound because we couldn't meet the gold demand, then Ben Jacobson, who suggested this the other day in Italy, that we now have a world liquidation of debt and that all the deposits will be made with World Bank, and then all of it will be reshuffled from the clearinghouses back to the countries in currency and collateral. And then if we ended up owing $1 trillion, you know, they would levy this debt against the property of all the citizens to be paid off like rent until the debt is liquidated. Or else, if they refused this, they would confiscate that property and throw out the darn payer. So you don't even own your home if you've got to pay fees for it, as long as they give away your money and have you in debt to the Jew banker, and the design is to get a clearinghouse so that they can now take over the property of the East United States. That, my friends, is what the Antichrist is all about, what the Bible is telling you it's all about, and that's why they put these stooges up in front of you to put this over. I'm going to tell you that if they ever try to do that, that there's going to be millions of Americans that are going to say, we're not going to pay a rent on our own home, and we're not going to pay tribute to the World Bank, to the Jew Bank, or the United Nations, and we'll fight a new revolution right here. Well, don't dare talk that way. Well, the FBI man is here tonight to take that right back and quote it word for word, because I can show you some of the most prominent states in the United States are going along with me tonight. We will uphold the Constitution of the United States, and it's totally unconstitutional for the dispersion of your property assets in the United States outside the United States to perform an indebtedness upon the territory of the United States government. We will uphold the Constitution of the United States and the government of the United States to the full extremity. But we do not recognize the international Jew conspiracy as the government of the United States of America. This is a conspiracy. This is what the Bible talks about when it talks about Antichrist. And I tell you tonight that if you want to know who financed the Red Revolution, organized world Jewry through their world Jewish banks have financed that revolution. They not only admit it, but we have unprecedented evidence that this is done.